I'm Josh Klein.
And I'm Elise Hugh.
We host a podcast from Accenture called Built for Change.
Every part of every business is being reinvented right now. That means companies are facing brand new pressures to use fast-evolving technologies and address shifting consumer expectations.
But with big changes come even bigger opportunities. We've talked with leaders from every corner of the business world to learn how they're harnessing change to totally reinvent their companies.
And how you can do it too.
Subscribe to Built for Change now so you don't miss an episode.
From the New York Times, I'm Sabrina Tavernisi, and this is The Daily. When a racist audio recording of Latino lawmakers in Los Angeles was made public, it created a political firestorm and demands for resignations. It forced Los Angeles to reckon with what officials say behind closed doors. But it also raised an uncomfortable question. Why is a city with so many Latinos represented by so few of them? Today, I talk to my colleague, California correspondent Sean Hubler. It's Wednesday, October 19th. Sean, tell me about the recording at the center of the scandal in Los Angeles. What's on it?
This is a recording that was made last October, and it was one of several recordings that were made without the knowledge of the people speaking at the headquarters of the Los Angeles County Labor Federation, which is a very powerful Democratic organization in local politics in LA. And on the tape are three members of the Los Angeles City Council. Nuri Martinez.
Did you talk to Kerr?
That's the woman's voice you hear. She's the president of the Los Angeles City Council, which is a very powerful position, by the way. And two other council members.
It'd be the same action as it was like Wizard. Right.
Kevin DeLeon and Gil Cedillo, who both represent pieces of East LA. And in Kevin DeLeon's case, downtown. And they're meeting with Ron Herrera, the head of the Labor Fed, who is a longtime acquaintance of all of them. And they were meeting at a time when Los Angeles was undergoing a process that happens every 10 years.
So anyways, getting back to redistricting.
Yes.
Redrawing the boundaries of its political districts. These were districts in which these folks were all going to have to be reelected. And they had just gotten some bad news. They're looking at these draft maps, recommendations on how the lines ought to be drawn, and they're not liking them. And they were meeting to see how can we get what we want out of this map.
And what were they saying about what they did want? What were they looking at when they cast their eyes out into these districts and the lines?
So basically,
we're in a different spot now than we were 25 years ago. The thing for us is to exercise our power.
They're looking to maximize the power of the Latino community in Los Angeles overall.
I mean, we're like the little Latino caucus of our, you know, our own
city.
Yeah.
And as they look at the maps, they particularly don't like that some sort of high-value institutions are being mapped out of Latino districts, potentially.
Yeah, you took away the airport, you took away Anheuser-Busch, you took away, which generates about 1,000 jobs.
Things like airports and stadiums that are economic drivers that provide a lot of jobs that could help them and their Latino allies in the future, you know, get elected and employ people in their district.
Yeah. So if you want to talk about Latino districts, what kind of districts are you trying to create? Because you're taking away our assets. So you're just going to create poor Latino districts with nothing?
So they're upset.
They're upset. And the conversation begins to get personal. And in particular, Nuri Martinez, who's the council president, she starts to attack her colleagues. And to be clear, she's the most outspoken of the three. But the other guys don't really stop her.
What do they say?
So there's a section in the conversation where the council president is talking about one of her colleagues on the council.
Mike Bonin.
A guy named Mike Bonin. He's white. He's a gay man, and he represents a wealthier part of Los Angeles, the West Side. And he and his partner have adopted this child, who is now 8 years old, going on nine, and the little boy is black. And she's talking about this episode.
Bonnie would be like, hey, Nuri, are you going to the MLK? Well, Herb invited me, yeah, I'll go. Okay, I'm bringing whatever the kid's name is. I'm like.
Where at the Martin Luther King Jr. Parade in Los Angeles, Mike Bonin and his son are on a float with her.
It's like the oddest thing. It's like black and brown on this float. And then there's this white guy with this little black kid.
And she compares Mike Bonin's son.
It's an accessory.
From the Louis Vuitton bag. Yeah.
To an accessory.
Oh, man.
The kid is bouncing off the effing walls on the floor. There's nothing you can do to control him.
She says the little boy is misbehaving. She says that the kid might tip the float over.
I'm over here trying to parent this kid. I'm like, you can't do that. I said no.
She uses the Spanish word.
I say changuito.
Changuito, which means little monkey, to describe his son.
It's me and Karen Bass on the float trying to check this little kid.
She says that she would like to take the kid around back.
This kid needs a beat down. Like, let me take him around the corner and then I'll bring him back.
Yeah.
And beat him.
It's a pinch. Yeah.
So ugly.
Ugly and racist. And Bonin is not the only target of this conversation.
What's his name? Let's see what it looks like.
The guy with the
one
eyebrow.
Tall guy.
They talk about Armenian political colleagues.
What's his last name?
And it's an IAM, I bet you.
Jewish political colleagues.
I'm sure Katz and his crew have an agenda.
The Judíos cut their deal with South LA.
They attack white liberals.
Because I told folks again, all those crazies in Orange County who are pro-Trump, I said, forget about that. They're no threat to us.
Who they see as, you know, kind of stabbing them in the back politically.
It's the white liberals. It's the LA Times.
Amen.
You know?
At one point, they veer into a conversation on Koreatown, which once was a large settlement of Korean immigrants in Los Angeles, but now is a very diverse neighborhood.
K-Town's a misnomer.
Okay.
It's called K-Town, but because it's got a lot of Koreans, but it's all Latinos.
And they talk about how Latino Koreatown is now.
I see a lot of little short, dark people.
Yeah, puro Oaxacan. Puro Oaxacan Korean.
And there's a riff on Oaxacans.
So I don't know where these people are from. I don't know what village they came, how they got here, but.
And they talk about them in rather offensive terms.
I get what we have
to do, right? Wow, so that was really quite something. So this really ugly talk against one of their colleagues' black son, also disparaging remarks against Jews, Armenians, Oaxacans, and all on this secret recording. But obviously, at some point, the secret recording stops being secret.
That's right. The recording was sort of squirreled away for about a year, and then it emerges. It was uploaded to Reddit, made its way into the hands of some reporters at the Los Angeles Times. And there are a lot of theories about who recorded it and who leaked it. None have been substantiated just yet. But in any case, when the tape was released last week, it created just a total firestorm in the city.
LA City Council President Nuri Martinez under fire.
Shocking audio recordings, racially charged statements, and slurs.
What a story this is. It's a bombshell. It's stunning.
Right out of the gate, the young Democratic progressives in the city call for resignations for everybody.
Let me start by saying racism is a disease that must be confronted head on and dug out of our bodies, of our systems, of our communities.
Calls from the black community in the city for everybody to be gone altogether.
Oaxacan music playing again Wednesday evening outside of Los Angeles City Hall.
The Oaxacans are upset. They face a lot of discrimination, and so they were really hurt by these comments.
And if there's anybody else that knew and didn't say anything, they must go too.
And the calls persist. Mentors of these politicians other Latino politicians, Senator Alex Padilla.
Has the president followed this? Does he have a reaction to
what's
going on?
Yes, he's followed this, spoke to him about it yesterday.
And even President Biden weighs in.
He believes that they all should resign. The language that was used and tolerated during that conversation was unacceptable, and it was appalling. They should all step down. And here's the difference.
President Biden, which is about as big as it gets, right? The president of the United States reaching into local city politics and saying lawmakers must resign.
That's right. These are Democrats on the Los Angeles City Council, and their own president is calling on them to resign.
So what happens? How does it end?
So Nori Martinez relinquishes the council presidency, and then Ron Herrera steps down from the Labor Federation. But it's not enough. And so on Tuesday morning, it all culminates at the city council at Los Angeles City Hall.
Good morning. Good morning, and welcome to your Los Angeles City Council.
People jam into City Hall, infuriated about this leaked tape. Kevin DeLeon and Gil Cedillo walk in, and people scream and curse at them in multiple languages. To the point that the two of them end up having to go into a back room of the council because they're creating so much chaos.
Wow.
We would like to hear from Councilmember Bonin. Will you all make that possible for us?
Mike Bonin takes the microphone.
Good morning, everybody.
A silence falls.
I really, really do not want to be here today. I want to be home with my family right now. I want to say a few words.
Mike Bonin gives this incredibly moving speech about his son and just how unbelievably hurt he is by this.
Before anything else in the world, I'm a dad. I'm a dad who loves his son in ways that words cannot capture. And I take a lot of hits, and hell, I know I practically invite a bunch of them. But my son, man, that makes my soul bleed, and it makes my temper burn, and I know I'm not alone, because Los Angeles has spoken, and it feels the same way.
And what it's going to take for the city to heal, and for him to heal?
Now, There are a lot of people who are now asking for forgiveness and asking for forgiveness is a good first step, but well, it's a second step because first you must resign and then ask for forgiveness.
The room goes wild again.
Mike, thank you for your courage. Thank you for expressing your sorrow. We share it with you, Mike, and you can tell in this chamber you're surrounded by people who are here for you, who are here for Sean, who are here for Jacob.
The council can't get anything done.
All right, seeing as we're not going to be able to proceed with what we're seeing right now, I will have to call a recess. We'll start this.
They end up putting this over to the next day.
Wow.
And over this time, Nori Martinez, who has already given up her presidency and who has not come into the meeting, she issues a statement that she'll take a leave of absence. And finally, on Wednesday, she resigns entirely from the city council. And by this time, Ron Herrera, the head of the Labor Federation, has also resigned. Mm-hmm. And the pressure is now mounting on the other two council members to go.
So how do you make sense of this, Sean? I mean, how do you understand what you've just witnessed?
Well, at this point, a lot of us are trying to puzzle through, right, what has really just happened here. Because there's, on one hand, a kind of a surface version of this chaos, and then there's a deeper version of it. And it has everything to do with Los Angeles and its history of dealing with race and ethnicity and power.
We'll be right back.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
When you think about the 2024 election, how do you feel?
Sickened.
Hey, y'all. Estead Herndon here, host of The Run-Up from The New York Times. And recently, I've been asking this question a lot.
I feel tired. I feel a little scared.
And I've been hearing the same sort of answer in reply.
We have an incompetent incumbent and a Republican that I'm not going to vote for. Yeah.
When voters look ahead to the 2024 presidential election, they feel apathy, dread, that it's just a mess. The Run-Up is your guide to that mess. Each week,
I am going to vote for the man with the most impeachments and the most indictments.
We'll talk to voters, elected officials.
I believe America can do for anyone what she's done for me.
And the candidates themselves, all to help you better understand this moment in American politics. The Run-Up is new every Thursday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Sean, you mentioned that this whole conversation was taking place in the context of redistricting, like how power is going to be redistributed in the city of Los Angeles, and that there was some frustration there. What was it about?
It has to do with how the population of Los Angeles has changed in recent years. So Los Angeles is a huge city. It's the second largest city in the United States in terms of population. It's roughly 4 million people, which is approximately the same population as the whole state of Oklahoma. And it's very diverse. Every permutation you can think of racially and ethnically. And Los Angeles has for a very long time been majority-minority, which is to say no one racial or ethnic group has the numbers to really call the shots. But now something different has happened. In the last decade or so, the number of Latinos in Los Angeles has grown to the point that Latinos are reaching a kind of critical mass. They're overtaking all other groups in terms of population. They're now close to 50%
Wow.
of the population of the city of Los Angeles, and could be more by some estimates. And, you know, this is all over Los Angeles. I mean, parts of the city that were once Koreatown or a district full of Armenian families or historically Black are now full of immigrants from places like Mexico and El Salvador and Guatemala. And so the districts have changed remarkably, but their representation has not changed. And so on the Los Angeles City Council, for example, you would say, okay, there are 15 council seats in Los Angeles. Latinos, 50% of the population. How many should they have? Well, one could argue maybe 7 or 8 at least, right? But no, they only had 4 at the time this conversation was leaked. And now, of course, they only have 3.
Wow, huh. So that's a lot less than, you know, technically, if their share on the city council corresponded with their share in the population, they should have.
That's right. There are about 6 white council members, but non-Hispanic white people in Los Angeles only represent about 28% of the population.
That's a lot of white representatives for not a lot of white population.
Right. At least that's what some people argue, that the number of representatives on the council should be basically proportional to the demographic makeup of the city, that there should be a match between the proportion of population that is ethnically Latino or white or Black and the proportion of the council seats that are held by folks of that race or ethnicity.
And it seems like embedded in that argument is this unstated assumption that you can really only be represented appropriately by someone of your own ethnic or racial group.
Right. And of course, not everyone agrees with that. Not everyone agrees necessarily that you have to be Black in order to represent Black people in your district, or that you have to be white to represent fairly white or people in your district, that, you know, or even represent them really well, you know, that you have to do any more than just listen and understand and, you know, and fairly take their side and look out for the constituents in your district, regardless of race or ethnicity. But for what it's worth, white people are not the only group in Los Angeles that have more representation on the council proportionally than they have in the demographics of the city. There are also more Black council members than the Black share of population in Los Angeles.
But what are their numbers?
About 8.8% of Los Angeles population now is Black. And about 20% of the council seats are held by Black council members.
Okay, so Latinos have the numbers, but don't have the representation. But why is that? And going back to the tape, that conversation is happening in the midst of redistricting, which is presumably connected to this demographic mismatch you're talking about.
Absolutely. Because over the years, there have been long issues in LA of Latino people trying to gain power in the city, gain seats on the council. And they have. They've made some progress. But the progress has been slow and it's been incremental. And it's arguably that has been sort of okay with people because all the Latinos couldn't necessarily vote. Many of them were undocumented or recent enough immigrants that they had not been naturalized yet. Many of them were just learning the country, learning the city. Okay, fine. But now, their numbers are such, and even their voting numbers are such, that there's, according to many Latinos in the city, no excuse for these numbers anymore. And so that's the context. That's how these politicians feel about the situation anyway, that they personally have not gotten their fair share of the spoils, that Latinos have not gotten their fair share in the city. And right, among them, they want more districts, they want more Latino power, they want more respect, they want more opportunity for Latino politicians like themselves, they want more for what they consider their people. For example, take the comments that they make about Mike Bonin. The sense that they have is that all of the good things in LA are in white council districts. That, for example, Los Angeles International Airport, which is in Mike Bonin's district, you know, is a really rich, fat political plum. Why isn't in one of their districts? Why does the white guy have it? There's a lot of that kind of underlying the personal remarks that they make.
But presumably these council members are looking out for themselves, too. Like, this is also in a really basic way about getting reelected, right?
Oh, absolutely. And you can hear it on the tape. They're very concerned about their own particular political futures, their own grip on the party. These are accomplished people. These are esteemed people, all of them. Nuria Martinez, she came out of the school board. She was the first Latina to head the city council. Kevin De Leon, he was an activist before he became a politician. He ran the upper house of the state legislature. It's one of the most powerful positions in California. He championed the notion of California as a sanctuary state. Gil Cedillo got driver's licenses for people regardless of documentation. Mm. It was a game changer for just hundreds of thousands of Latino immigrants in California. It was a huge, huge thing. All of these people are, you know, sort of important political figures in LA, but they're also watching their left flank. They're also seeing coming behind them a new generation of Los Angeles activists and Democrats, young progressives who are pushing for faster change, bigger change, bolder stances. And it turns out that after this recording is made, by the way, a young progressive did oust Gil Cedillo from his seat during the primary, and he's going to have to step down in a couple of months.
So it sounds like this kind of helps explain the urgency and the anger of these lawmakers on the tapes, right? That they were fighting for their own political survival in a lot of ways. And it's all kind of connected, this complicated question of what does it mean to give Latino voters what they deserve in this moment? I mean, now that they've become such a big part of the city's electorate.
That's right. There are a lot of people with a stake in this question. There will be winners and losers that come out of this question.
So let's zoom out for a moment here, Sean, and just kind of think about this. Because from what you're saying, you know, it is at its core a story about power and demography and representation and change. But I wonder if it's also a story about lawmakers undermining their own goals. I mean, am I right to think that with this resignation of the city council president, that this recording has really set back the goal of empowering Latino voters in Los Angeles, right? I mean, it would seem that way, like that all of this has actually weakened Latino lawmakers.
Well, right. Absolutely. In the short term, most obviously, they've lost a city councilwoman. They're down one person. Two other city councilmen are under intense pressure to resign from the White House on down.
And I would imagine the work of the council itself is pretty impaired, right?
Oh, absolutely. Just interpersonally, how do you get past something like this, right? I mean, Mike Bonin has even said that the way that he could forgive would be if they resigned. So the work of the council is definitely impaired. And there's real work to be done, by the way. There are other problems in Los Angeles, let's face it, right, to deal with. You know, it's unclear how this is going to play out in the future. When you talk to Latino voters, as we've been talking to Latino voters all week long, they completely condemn the racist remarks, and they were talking about somebody's kid. That did not play well. But the overall sense that representation needed to be updated, that's a real feeling in Los Angeles. And what we're hearing from voters is, yes, you know, we don't like the way that they said it, but yeah, it's our turn.
Sean, thank you.
Thank you.
On Monday, Kevin DeLeon and Gil Cedillo were stripped of their committee assignments as part of continuing efforts to convince them to step down from the city council. And on Tuesday, the council replaced Nuri Martinez as president. We'll be right back.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, starring Zendaya as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach. Married to art, a champion on a losing streak played by Mike Feist, Tashi's strategy for her husband's redemption takes a turn when he faces off against the washed-up Patrick, played by Josh O'Connor, his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend. Pasts and presents collide. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
Here's what else you should know today.
The court got Roe right nearly 50 years ago, and I believe Congress should codify Roe once and for all.
President Joe Biden promised Tuesday that if Democrats kept control of the House and expanded their numbers in the Senate in the midterm election, the first bill he would send to Congress next year would be one that codifies abortion rights across the country.
If you care about the right to choose, then you got to vote. That's why in these midterm elections are so critical, elect more Democratic senators to the United States Senate and more Democrats to keep control of the House of Representatives.
In a speech in Washington aimed at energizing the Democratic Party's base ahead of the midterms, just 3 weeks away, Biden urged Democrats to remember how they felt in June when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. And Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Russia's recent bombing campaign had destroyed about a third of Ukraine's power stations in the course of just 8 days. He said that the airstrikes have caused, quote, massive blackouts across the country, and that hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians are also without water. The attacks on critical infrastructure are happening far from the front line in cities like Kyiv, and they come as the weather starts to get cold ahead of winter. This week, the World Health Organization warned of the potential for a humanitarian disaster if the power remains out in Ukraine. Today's episode was produced by Will Reed and Luke Vanderpluk, with help from Rob Zipko. It was edited by Liz O'Balin, with help from Lisa Chow. Fact-checked by Susan Lee, contains original music by Marian Lozano, and was engineered by Chris Wood. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. That's it for The Daily. I'm Sabrina Tavernisi. See you tomorrow.
Everyone deserves access to clean, affordable energy. Everyone. Millions of Americans rely on propane for dependable energy that is independent from the electric grid. Propane is reliable, versatile energy produced in the United States that powers school buses, hospitals, and our homes with lower carbon emissions than conventional fuels. The path to a low-carbon future includes cleaner energy like propane. And the production of renewable propane, which is made from used cooking oils and plant oils, is growing rapidly. Propane is the energy for everyone. Learn more at propane.com.